On a Thursday, it's Morning Edition from NPR News. Good morning, I'm David Greene.
And I'm Renee Montaigne. Morning Edition's Steve Inskeep is nearing the end of a journey from Carthage to Cairo, a revolutionary road trip through the nations of the Arab Spring. His final stop is the center of the Arab world's politics and culture. It also has the largest economy of any city in the Arab world. So the economic concerns of people in Cairo may help decide the future of the Arab revolutions.
Up to this point, we've traveled about 2,500 miles through Tunisia, Libya, parts of Egypt. We're now in the train station in Alexandria, Egypt, in a cafe, drinking coffee, waiting for the train to take us to the capital city, Cairo. A presidential election is underway in this country, the first free presidential election Egypt has ever had. It's a runoff. They've already gone through the first round. Two candidates remain. A train ride shows you the old side of a city, the back side of a city. On the way into Cairo, you see laundry draped over balconies of brick apartment buildings. Here and there, a balcony has been built onto an oversized room, which clings to the side of a building like a barnacle. There's another building beyond that, and still another beyond. You sense the massive scale of this metropolis, the heart of the Nile River Valley, and you see posters on the walls for the two presidential candidates. Leave the Cairo station and walk through the old city, and you find people talking politics beneath a tree full of birds. This is the edge of the Khan el-Khalili market, where in better times, tourists would flock. How has business been the last year, year and a half, since the revolution?
Very bad. Very, very bad. Everything is stopped.
And restaurant owner Hassan el-Halwagi says he's not feeling happy. We found him sitting at one of his outdoor tables, watching tourists not pass by. This weekend's scheduled election doesn't reassure him, especially because one of the final two candidates comes from the party linked with the Islamist Muslim Brotherhood.
They are stupid, ignorant, uneducated, everything bad.
You don't believe that people should mix religion and politics?
At all. People, they're talking about religion. They cannot do a proper work to control a country or talking about political. They are different.
And he fears that if the Brotherhood wins power, they'll never give it up. The first round of Egypt's election left voters with a stark choice, the candidate from the Brotherhood or a former prime minister linked with Egypt's powerful army. Many business owners here favor the military's man, who promises to get tough, restore order, and give business something to celebrate. We passed women in this market celebrating the purchase of a wedding ring as men hammered out designs in metal plates. We walked through carved stone archways, gates, and centuries-old city walls, which people once relied on to keep out trouble. Medieval rulers built walls within the walls, turning each neighborhood into a gated community. The farther we moved, the narrower the streets became, until they felt like hallways, where men waited for a chance to sell string instruments called ouds, or killed time in plastic chairs watching soccer on TV. And as they waited, they talked, and we constantly overheard the names of the presidential candidates. Morsi, Shafiq, Morsi, Shafiq. Morsi is the Muslim Brotherhood's man. Shafiq is tied to the army. A jewelry store employee, Karim Goma, says, if we elect Shafiq, why did we have a revolution? He says he favors the Brotherhood, that Egyptians are naturally religious. He says the shop owners just want the army to protect their money, which prompts his boss to speak up. People who vote for Morsi are deluded, the shop owner says. As we cross this city, we find many people trying to avoid delusions. Their new freedom has come at a cost, forcing many to adjust their economic expectations. So we've slipped out of central Cairo at the tail end of the morning rush, creeping along a highway with presidential campaign billboards along the entire length of it. And now we're on what's called the Alexandria Desert Road, slipping out into the desert, as the name suggests, and connecting Cairo with ever-spreading development as this city expands and expands. We arrive in a new suburban gated community. Construction workers are building it under the direction of an Egyptian company called Sodic. Can I just mention, we're standing here on a green lawn, and right across the highway is desert. I mean, absolute desert.
Absolutely.
I suppose it was absolute desert on this side just a few years ago.
Indeed. Entirely.
Dasha Badrawi, the company's chief business development officer, drove us around the community.
So this is the project called 40 West that I was telling you about, which was the apartments, and now this is Beverly Hills. Everything beyond here is the Beverly Hills project.
The Beverly Hills homes are not really on a Beverly Hills scale, but other neighborhoods in this development feature multi-million dollar houses. Down the street, you can find a mall, an international school, a golf course designed by two-time British Open champion Greg Norman. The fairways are surrounded by elegant new homes with acres of glass awaiting the next errant shot. This kind of development flourished in the last years of Egypt's former ruler Hosni Mubarak. And when you hear how Badrawi's company has adapted to post-revolutionary times, you learn a lot about a changing Egypt.
Pre-revolution, Egypt was looking at a period of very high economic growth, lots of affluence and emerging middle class affluence, and there were investment bankers and the multinational companies were paying heavy salaries. So things, we were looking at 7-8% economic growth, and people's aspirations were high, and they were buying homes generally on the basis they were going to receive good bonuses, and they were going to get much wealthier in the coming period. And since the revolution, there's been a bit of a reset.
A big reset, economic and otherwise. After the revolution, Sodik's former chairman disappeared amid corruption charges. Egypt's general prosecutor, however, wrote that the company wasn't involved, and Sodik continued construction.
I think we've shown ourselves to be fairly resilient. The economy's still standing on its feet, I think, barely.
And pointing at a giant-scale model of the community, Badrawi shows a new neighborhood that is still upscale, but designed for leaner times. These are the areas that have been designed since the revolution.
So the villas, the small, let's say the townhouses and the villas that you're seeing over there.
The houses now under construction are smaller, the prices are lower, and they're marketed to appeal to people seeking safety.
Security has become a big issue in the last year and a half. So Egypt was one of the countries that was unnaturally secure before. We had a very strong police presence. Now there are incidents. And so I think one of the reactions of people to this new set of circumstances is, okay, what about security?
Residents pass through two guarded gates on their way home. They can live many miles from the crowded streets of central Cairo and the political turmoil of Tahrir Square. Even in this economy, Sodik reports, sales are up sharply. Badrawi sees hope in that for his company and for Egypt, though he still sees challenging times ahead, some of the hardest since he moved here 12 years ago from London.
Have you thought at all about, time to return to London?
If, let's put it this way, I'd be very concerned if the Islamists came in.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you might have a Muslim Brotherhood president in a few days.
I'd be very concerned. That's a personal point of view.
He says the Muslim Brothers are strongly pro-business, but may not do well in the long term. And if the army's candidate wins, he worries about social disorder, which might affect people's lives, even in a place as orderly as this.
So I wanted you just to see the idea of, it's an 18-hole golf course. This is the restaurant at the clubhouse from which you kind of tee off.
For as long as he possibly can, Badrawi is working to keep trouble outside the gates.
Now, since Steve filed his report, the political scene in Egypt has grown even more uncertain. Egypt's constitutional court ruled this morning that the nation's parliament must be dissolved because of questionable voting in the last election. This likely means the country's ruling generals will take over legislative powers. NPR Soraya Sarhadi Nelson in Cairo tells us the effect this ruling might have on Egypt's presidential election should be known in the coming hours. And you can stay tuned to NPR for much more on this developing story. You are listening to Morning Edition from NPR News.